Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things together. Part 6, Chapter 17, Discussion Prompts. Another The Gang's All Here moment. Was that really my only discussion prompt last night? That's not a very good one. That is not a very good discussion prompt. I apologize for that. But, yeah, I suppose that's true. Tolstoy does a great gangs all here type thing. It's kind of one of his staples. You know, it happens in hundreds of books. Lots of people use that technique, but you have your set of characters and then you set them up to come together at some event or at some kind of pivotal moment in the book. So here they are. They're all meeting up. Swim said the mum fish, she said, my translation has this line. Sorry, just trying to wake myself up. He asked how his friend the crank was getting on with his young wife. Wikipedia has an entire entry on the word crank. It is an interesting choice. Crank is a pejorative term used for a person who holds an unshakable belief that most of his or her contemporaries consider to be false. A crank belief is so widely at variance with those commonly held that it is considered ludicrous, like a flat earther or something, right? Common synonyms for a crank include a crackpot or a kook. A crank differs from a fanatic in that the subject of a fanatic's obsession is either not necessarily widely regarded as wrong or not necessarily a fringe belief. Very interesting. So he's a crank. What does he believe that's such a fringe belief? I am Norwegian said, Anna seems really happy again. Something reflected in her looks. How long has it been since we last spent time with Anna and Vronsky? I seem to remember that Anna was pretty broken down in both body and spirit. True. She does seem, I don't know, Anna. Annery. I'm kind of excited for this, the gang's all back together again moment. Well, I can't really remember the cast of this particular scene other than Anna and Vronsky. Oh, and Dolly. And was it Vasenka? Was it the guy that Levin cast away because he flirted with Kitty? I don't know. Anyway, let's just read it. Chapter 18 goes a little bit like this. Anna was looking at Dolly's thin, wan face with its dust-filled wrinkles and wishing to tell her just what she thought, that Dolly looked thinner and worse. But remembering that her own looks had improved and that Dolly's eyes had told her so, she sighed and began talking about herself. You are looking at me, she said, and wondering whether I can be happy, placed as I am. Well, what do you think? I am ashamed to confess it, but I am unforgivably happy. Something magical has happened to me, like a dream when one feels frightened and creepy and suddenly wakes up to the knowledge that no such terror exists. I have wakened up. I have lived through suffering and terror, but for a long time past, especially since we came here, I have been happy, she said, looking at Dolly timidly and with a questioning smile. I am so glad, answered Dolly, smiling, but in a colder tone than she intended. I am very glad for your sake. Why did you not write to me? Why? Because I did not dare. You forget my position. To tell me you dare not, if only you knew how I consider. Dolly wanted to tell Anna what she had been thinking that morning, but for some reason it now seemed out of place. However, we will talk about all that later. What is it? What are all those buildings? Quieter town, she asked, to change the subject, pointing to the red and green roofs visible above a living green wall of acacias and lilacs. But Anna did not answer her. No, no. What view do you take of my position? What do you think? What? She asked. One moment, please. What? She asked. I imagine, Dolly began, but at that moment, Vasenka Veselovsky, who had got the cob to lead with the right foot, galloped past in his short jacket, bumping heavily on the leathers of the side saddle. It goes all right, Anna Arkadyevna, he shouted. Anna did not even glance at him, but it still seemed to Dolly out of place to begin to discuss this big subject in the caliche, so she briefly replied, "I don't take any view, I always loved you, and if one loves the whole person, as he or she is, and not as one might wish them to be." Anna, turning her eyes away from her friend and screwing them up, this was a new habit of hers and unfamiliar to Dolly, grew thoughtful, trying thoroughly to grasp the meaning of the remark. Having evidently understood it in the sense she wished, she glanced at Dolly. "If you had any sins," she said, "they would all be forgiven you for coming here and for those words." And Dolly noticed that tears had started to her eyes. She silently pressed Anna's hand. "But what are those buildings? What a lot of them there are. What a lot of them there are," said she after a moment's silence, repeating her question. "They are the employees' houses, the stud farm and the stables," answered Anna. "And here the park begins. Everything has been neglected, but Alexis has had it all renovated. He's very fond of this estate, and a thing I never expected of him, he is quite enthusiastic in managing the place. But of course he is such a talented nature. Whatever he takes up, he does splendidly. He's not only not bored, but passionately engrossed in his occupations. He has grown into a first-rate, prudent landlord, as I recognize. In farming matters, he is even stingy, but only in farming. Where it is a question of thousands, he does not count them," he said. She said, with that joyous, sly smile with which women often speak of the secret characteristics discovered by them alone of the man they love. "Do you see that big building? Is the new hospital. I think it will cost more than 100,000 rubles. That is his hobby just now. And do you know why he started it? The peasants asked him to let them some meadows at a reduced rent, I think, and he refused, and I reproached him with being stingy. Of course, he was not that alone, but one thing with another caused him to start that hospital, to show, you know, that he is not stingy. C'est un petit. It is pettiness, if you like. But I love him the better for it. And now you will see the house in a moment. It was his grandfather's, and it was not, has not been altered at all on the outside." "How fine," said Dolly, looking with involuntary surprise at a handsome house with a row of columns standing out among the variously tinted foliage of the old trees in the garden. "It is fine, is it not? And from upstairs the view is wonderful." They drove into a gravelled courtyard surrounded by flowers, where two men were making a border of rough, porous stones around a well-forked flower bed, and stopped beneath a roofed portico. "Ah, they've already arrived," said Anna, looking at the horses that were being led away from the front door. "Don't you think that one is a beautiful horse? It is a cob, my favourite. Bring it here and get me some sugar. Where is the Count?" she asked the two elegant footmen who had rushed out. "Ah, there he is," she went on, seeing Vronsky and Veslovsky coming out to meet her. "In which room are you putting the princess?" Vronsky asked in French, addressing Anna, and without waiting for her answer, he once more welcomed Dolly, and this time he kissed her hand. "The large room with the balcony, I should think." "Oh, no, that's too far off. The corner room will be better. We shall see more of one another there." "Well, let's go in," said Anna, who had given her favourite horse the sugar the footman had brought. "Et vous oubliez votre devoir, and you forget your duty," said she to Veslovsky, who was also standing in the portico. "Pardon, je n'ai tout plein les poches." "Pardon me, my pockets are full of it," he answered, with a smile, plunging his fingertips into his waistcoat pocket. "Mais vous venez trop tard," but you have come too late, she said, wiping with her handkerchief the hand which the horse had wetted as it took the sugar. Anna turned to Dolly. "How long can you stay?" "Only a day, that's impossible." "I have promised, and the children," answered Dolly, feeling embarrassed because she had to get her bag out of the caliche and because she knew her face was covered with dust. "No, Dolly, darling. Well, we will see. Come, come along," and Anna led the way to Dolly's room. It was not the grand room that Vronsky had suggested, but one for which Anna apologized to Dolly, and this room, needing an apology, was full of luxuries, such as Dolly had never lived among, which reminded her of the best hotels abroad. "Well, dearest, how happy I am," said Anna, who in her riding habit had sat down for a moment beside Dolly. Tell me about yourselves. I met Steve in passing, but he can't tell me about the children. How is my pet Tanya? Grown a big girl, I suppose. Yes, quite big, answered Dolly shortly, and was herself surprised that she could talk so coldly about her children. We are very comfortable at the Levens, she added. There now, had I only known that you don't despise me, said Anna. You should all have come to us. You know, Steve and Alexis are old and great friends, she added, and suddenly blushed. Yes, but we are so comfortable, answered Dolly with embarrassment. However, my joy makes me talk nonsense, but really, dear, I am so glad to see you, said Anna, kissing her again. You have not yet told me how and what you think about me, and I want to know everything. But I am glad that you will see me just as I am. Above all, I don't want you to think that I wish to prove anything. I don't want to prove anything. Simply, I wish to live, not hurting anyone but myself. I have the right to do that, have I not? However, that needs a long talk, and we will talk it all well over later. Now I will go and dress and send you the maid. All righty. Another chapter chaptered. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.